the situation where there are only a small number of tobacco users left in the world.
Chris, I love having you come in. This is the second time.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Well, really. And when we talked last night, sure, your topic was so interesting to me because I'd never heard of anyone really going after the way that you are. So let's get right into it. You're interested in trying to make sure there's a ban worldwide on tobacco consumption. Is that what am I correct with that?
I wouldn't say a ban.
Okay.
Yeah, we need.
Well, let's clarify, first of all, those of you that have not watched Christopher's first podcast, you need to find out that he's actually a lawyer that's been practicing in Japan for a long, long time. He's a U.S. attorney. You now have this epiphany. When did it start? It started when?
Well, I would say it started back about 2015. And then what I forgot to tell you about last night is there were two Japanese people who greatly encouraged me. One was Dr. Yumiko Rochizuki. So she's considered to be, she's called like the mother of tobacco control in Japan.
Okay.
And then also another woman working with the World Health Organization, Mina Kashiwabara. So they greatly encouraged me what I was doing, which is my main contribution so far, I think, has been having a Facebook and a LinkedIn and a little bit also on Twitter. So it's the first kind of widespread tobacco control that I think most people don't understand that term. They think more like anti-smoking or anti-tobacco or that kind of thing.
And you're not anti-tobacco? You're not anti-smoking?
We have to be careful in the wording of it. Because the focus is the industry,
okay.
The tobacco industry. It's another kind of problem in Japan, which is there are many groups which focus on smokers, like they won't let smokers join their group. I don't have any problem with smokers joining the group. I don't care what people do in their personal life. What I care about is the policies that they support.
Okay, now explain that. So in other words, let me just try to guess what you're saying. You don't mind if someone goes in their home where they're only affecting themselves with their smoking habits, if they were smoking, for example. It does become a problem if they're infringing upon people that are not close to them or related to them for some reason or another.
No, what I mean more broadly is the goal to reach, as I said, we don't want to talk about ban because prohibition approach immediately gets a lot of negative reactions. My point would be over time, we reach the situation where there are only a small number of tobacco users left in the world.
Okay.
And that should be basically voluntary. I don't believe in any punishment on the users. As I said, the focus is to control and minimize the influence of the industry. My viewpoint, and I think the viewpoint of most people in tobacco control, would be that the smokers are a victim. They're probably the most direct victim because they're taking this lethal, highly addictive drug. What's usually not discussed in this by the tobacco industry is that by far and away, even in Japan, most smokers regret having started up smoking. Most tobacco users regret having started it.
Okay, but what happens, I'm just guessing, is that they have such a visceral response to stopping, trying to stop, that they need to continue again. It's so addictive.
Yeah, there's more and more is being learned about the effects of nicotine. But it alters, it's considered basically that now that it alters the brain chemistry such that it's very difficult for the tobacco user, the nicotine user, to quit. It's probably one of the most addictive drugs known to man.
But Chris, I'm still trying to figure out why you are so adamant. The two women, encourage you to do it, but why did you decide to take this on?
Well, once you realize the size of the outsized size of the impact. So if we look now in developing countries, essentially, health policy has changed from the prevention of communicable diseases. So, for example, we had the COVID outbreak. That would be a communicable disease. So that's still still can be important, but generally outside of these pandemics, it's not important. So the shift is towards what's called non-communicable diseases. Among those, tobacco, it's hard to specify because, you know, the outcomes are different, let's say, compared to alcohol. But still, the health impact compared to alcohol is probably, you know, 5 times at least. In Japan, for example, general estimates are that 150,000 people per year are dying from tobacco-related diseases. That means, at the same time, we have a very large number of people who have chronic disease related to tobacco use, like COPD or...
What is COPD?
Emphysema.
Emphysema, okay.
Yeah, emphysema, cancer, heart disease. They have reduced mobility, all kinds of side effects, largely affecting the lungs and the cardiovascular system, the heart and the arteries and everything like that. And then on top of it, because this health effect is so massive, there's other effects which are not considered as much. One example, which you probably see, would be litter. Despite all the campaigns from JT to be smoking clean, obvious way to use a cigarette is to smoke it and throw the butt on the ground. The idea of carrying around a mobile ashtray or anything like that is, it's never going to happen. You know, even there, that's a huge expense, and it's a very bad pollutant because all the toxins of the tobacco smoke are trapped into that filter. So that filter gets into the water. It can pollute many, many liters of water, just one small filter. It takes quite a long time for it to break down. So it's really one of the key plastic problems for plastic. Another thing largely people are not aware of is there's a lot of nicotine poisoning. Nicotine is one of the most powerful poisons that we know of. The unfortunate thing now is because, I guess, people tend to smoke more, kind of guess, in the Gamecon or out on the balcony or wherever like that.
Exactly, yes.
So they get like makeshift ashtrays. So instead of using an ashtray, they just pour some water in a pet bottle and drop their butts into there. If they're not careful, the children will get that. They'll drink it and they will have a severe reaction. It's called nicotine poisoning. Or they, you know, they just eat the cigarettes.
And then what happens then?
They have to go to the hospital.
Okay. But what does it do? I mean, the poisoning, how does it affect you? What are the effects of that poisoning?
What are the effects?
The effects, I mean, because when they poison, I mean, they start vomiting?
Yeah, it's a severe, it would be
on rashes.
I think the one thing is because it's a severe, like, stimulant on the heart. I mean, it happens.
Levitations.
It happens occasionally in very heavy smokers might get nicotine poisoning. And I guess the other one that's kind of obvious is fire. What's happened in the rest of the world, Canada, US, Europe, Australia, is now they have what they call the fire-safe cigarette, more technically called low combustion potential cigarette. So in other words, what they do is they insert very small breaks into the cigarette so that if the smoker drops it or, you know, passes out with this lit cigarette, it will not burn all the way to the end. Tobacco companies don't like this because they want the smoker to have the experience where they light the cigarette and it stays lit. So
they have to actually relight it. They have to light it again after it sits on the breaks.
They may have to.
They may have to. Unless they really draw on it and create enough heat to go past that barrier.
Yeah, so the key thing...
I've never heard of that. This is the first time hearing about that.
It makes a big difference in having tobacco, having smoking as a source of fire. Those other outcomes are very small compared to the massive health outcome. And actually, I think what most people don't realize is, so there's constant ongoing studies of the health effects of tobacco, particularly smoking. And so in the 80s, I guess it was considered that they thought that 1/3 of the people who were smokers would die from smoking-related illness.
That was in the 80s.
That was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Now it varies between 1/2 and 2/3.
What about, let's go into another area. What about vaping? Because that's with nicotine too, and that would be considered a tobacco source. And a lot of sugar, from what I understand, as well. Because now they have the different flavors. How do you make them have the flavors without you know, putting something in the artificial to make it taste like it's cherry or banana or whatever they're doing. I don't know.
Well, I'm not so expert on the vaping because it's not a big phenomenon in Japan. In Japan, vaping is in kind of a gray area because it doesn't have any natural occurring tobacco in it. It's classified as a pharmaceutical.
Is that right?
Yeah. So basically, the big change that's happening that you might see on the streets is people are smoking what's called heated tobacco products. It's either known by IQOS.
IQOS, yes.
I quit ordinary smoking. It's supposed to be.
Is that what it is?
That's the act.
And those are those little, they're not round necessarily. Sometimes they're kind of flat and square, and I see them suck on it.
Right. That's what it would be. The overwhelming popular one is the IQOS made by Philip Morris.
And it has a battery in it, right? Or something? Is
electronic? Yeah. So instead of combustion, they say basically it's heated up so that a tobacco vapor arises, and the people inhale that vapor. That's the main non-conventional, what we would call novel tobacco product. This is the other problem. This is why also I felt I would get involved, is the first time I went to a tobacco conference, basically, it's all this jargon, because the people are, it's like people are presenting papers at a scientific conference.
Okay. Now, this is pro-tobacco. You went to the conference?
No, this is the first large anti-tobacco conference I went to. It was in Tokyo in 2016. What I realized was this isn't going to go anywhere because, you know, it's just other doctors talking to other doctors. So
basically talking about what?
The harms, the harmful effects.
So one paper after another paper,
right?
The results of it. Okay.
Yeah.
And people just went, okay, and now I have that information, but there was nothing actionable taking place.
Right.
Just information being disseminated.
It's solidifying the medical, within the healthcare professionals, not limited to doctors. The doctors, obviously, but also pharmacists, dentists, and nurses. Used to be a major problem with nurses is they had a much higher smoking rate than women. I think it went up almost to 20%. So as you might know, in Japan, very few women smoke. There's a social stigma against women smoke. So usually the recorded rates, although I think there's probably not quite accurate because it's relying on self-reporting, but it's below 10 usually, around 7 or 8% of women smoke.
It can't be that accurate because...
Yeah, that was much higher, though, with nurses. Within the last while, it's been reduced to the normal rate. So within the medical community, there is solid support for pursuing tobacco control policies. And the first one that was actively pursued was secondhand smoke protection. I think there's widespread support for secondhand smoke protection because maybe you consider that smoking is a choice. I wouldn't really go with that kind of analogy because one thing that's ignoring is the tobacco industry is also making a choice. They're making the choice to make a highly addictive, lethal product.
Okay.
That's the choice I don't like. I believe in freedom, but I don't believe in that kind of freedom.
People pushing something they know isn't good for you.
Yes, they know it. They know it's harmful.
It's harmful, right?
And unlike any other consumer product, there's no safe way to consume tobacco. It's going to be harmful to you.
One initiative that was actually implemented, secondhand smoke.
Yes.
Right? Explain that to me. What was it? What did it cover?
Basically, two important initiatives. One is within Tokyo. There's a lawyer, Koki Okamoto, who is very involved in tobacco control. And he joined the Tomin First Party, that he ran in the Tomin First Party. So he became an assembly member. He's one of the few politicians that has a solid support for tobacco control. This is another problem faced in Japan, which is many politicians, particularly within the LDP, receive support from the tobacco industry. They oppose any and all tobacco laws. But it's also important to remember that the tobacco industry has a very nuanced strategy. So their strategy is defeat, delay, weaken. And we could see this particularly in Tokyo, because before Koike, many of the governors proposed, Tokyo is an international city. This is the international standard. We should go with it. And then they just abandoned it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
they defeated that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to assume, but I can't verify. Okay. Somebody whispered in your ear.
Right. They influence them somewhere. Yeah. Don't pass that. Make sure it doesn't go through.
Yeah. Don't even. It didn't even start out. It wasn't even proposed.
Okay.
It was discussed.
It was discussed, right.
Discussed, but never proposed. So Koike was the first to, in Tokyo, to propose it. But even there, we were hoping that there would be a significant secondhand smoke protection ordinance passed in time for the Rugby World Cup, which was in 2019.
Something like that.
Yes. But unfortunately, the first proposal received a heavy backlash. And I think probably the tobacco industry was hoping it would die there. But the second one was more successful because it had a focus on the protection of employees. So instead of saying there needs to be a blanket ban on smoking in buildings, it limited to establishments where there were employees. So that was more successful. Although...
And what was it? What was the stipulation? What did it mean? How was it be implemented, the rules? If I have a bunch of employees, what am I restricted from doing now?
The minimum position is there should be smoking only in... You can provide a smoking room, which I don't really think it's a good measure, but you can provide a smoking room and that has to be used exclusively for smoking. So people can't bring food and drink into that room. There was another loophole for heated tobacco products. So heated tobacco products are allowed to be treated in the old way, which is you have a heated tobacco product section, and that's kind of treated like the old smoking section. So that's the practical. I was in contact with the head of the Skylark, one of the executives for Skylark.
So as a restaurant chain.
And he told me, particularly, I found that part to be very outrageous. The fact that children would be exposed to secondhand smoke. I think if you consider from the values of the Japanese people, they are claiming to value children, and yet they're going to allow them to be exposed to secondhand smoke. They have no children to have no choice. Let's say even if you believe in this choice idea. Children don't have a choice. And I think given the information we have on the health effects of secondhand smoke, that particularly the children that have it are going to, in many cases, develop lifelong lung issues. Then will have particularly asthma for the rest of their life. That was one thing I was very particularly, I felt was completely outrageous. Of course, now the tobacco industry, they'd always backpedal. So they say, oh no, we never wanted to be children. Oh no, no. Except that it was. This was a common practice, if you can remember. People could. My friend from Australia was very outraged because he went to a family restaurant. He's with a child. And they said, do you want smoking or non-smoking? He said, am I supposed to take my child?
And this is what people did.
But people did.
That's exactly what they did. But I remember those days when they had the section for smoking. It didn't matter because everyone was still affected because there were no barriers. It was just a section. They didn't have barriers then.
This is the, difficulty, which is, it is practically very difficult to contain. This is the conclusion of air conditioning and other engineers. They have put a paper that basically the only way to keep smoke, the only way to solve the problem, the most effective solution is not to have smoke in the building, period.
Because smoke will go anywhere areas.
Yes.
Again, it's hard to contain it.
Even it can go, the particles in it can go through, walls.
Would assume to be, that appear to be solid, but they're not as solid as you think they are.
Exactly.
Because you can be in some buildings, you can feel air come through walls.
And then there's always the problem, which is, unlike you're containing some kind of toxic matter within a building, but people are going in and out.
And they bring it with them. They bring it right with them.
Well, that's the other issue.
I remember the days of seeing people come out of smoking rooms, and you could see the trail of smoke right with them.
Well, that's the other thing. We shouldn't be so easily convinced by the visuals, because the visual smoke is only a small amount of what's been actually produced in the smoke. There are hundreds of toxins, carcinogens within tobacco smoke
that aren't visible.
Yes. Okay. Including radiation, small amounts of radiation.
Yeah. Well, we're getting that anyway, aren't we? Through the sunlight and everything else. I mean, we can't avoid that. We can't avoid that, I don't think. That's why there's so much skin cancer all over the place.
To an extent that we don't need to really kind of add to it. I guess the other area that there's so much to unpack, but the other point which I felt I had a unique access to is to expose the work of Japan Tobacco. Japan Tobacco is now the third largest publicly traded tobacco company. They would be fourth if you included the state monopoly in China, but that is not, that's not a publicly traded company. It doesn't have, you can't buy shares in it. It's just, and it's mostly contained in China. But with Japan Tobacco, is a huge multinational tobacco company with its JTI's headquarters are in Geneva, and that it's very dominated by the Japanese management. And under the act to create Japan Tobacco, which was previously a state monopoly, currently the Ministry of Finance is supposed to hold at least one third of the shares in that. So they are the controlling group.
But it is publicly traded.
It's a publicly traded company. Okay. They are the controlling shareholder. This creates all kinds of problems, and I think most Japanese people wouldn't want anything to do with it. But essentially, like all tobacco companies, JT works to defeat health policy all over the world. For example, in Australia, they moved to what's called plain packaging. Australia pioneered this because all other countries were afraid to be sued by the tobacco companies. In Australia, they were sued by, among other tobacco companies, Japan Tobacco, which they appealed it. They went to trade organizations to try to say their argument was it was an expropriation of their intellectual property. So with plain packaging, what it means is you no longer have the nice packages of cigarettes like you have in Japan. And in fact, I would say the what they call the power wall is, so where all the cigarettes are displayed, like within a convenience store, is probably one of the most singularly attractive consumer products being sold in that store. And
that's called plain packaging?
No, plain packaging removes that. So when you have plain packaging, there's no brand markings. There's only the name of the brand. And plus, there's a very large explanation of the health issues related to smoking in a visual form. Some of it's quite shocking.
But what's the purpose? Just so that you can't find them directly?
The purpose is, one, to remove any attractiveness left.
Austria passed this law, so they had to go to plain packaging, which they don't really want to do.
Not at all.
So is Austria the only place in the world where they have this law?
No, now there's about 10 countries which have passed this, including Canada. Well, Canada went an extra measure now, and now they have a warning on each individual cigarette.
Printed on each cigarette?
Yeah. Obviously, it's kind of abbreviated. It'd be something like smoking kills or something.
Right, it's something like that.
Because what the key problem to end the tobacco epidemic is to stop youth. Well, part of it, of course, we have to have the current smokers quit. But since that's very difficult in the long term, the most important thing is that youth do not start smoking. They don't start using nicotine products. What they found in Canada is most people start by getting a cigarette from somebody. They don't go out and buy a pack, because, of course, in Canada, it costs you like 1,500 yen, maybe 2,000 yen to buy a pack of cigarettes.
That's expensive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, versus about 600 yen. And I should also mention somebody else who's making an initiative, which is my friend in Ibaraki, John Hayes, who is a naturalized Japanese citizen. And he is currently become an assembly person in the Ibaraki prefecture, prefectural assembly.
So he's also part of this movement.
He has proposed to have a ban on all in-store advertising of tobacco. This is the last refuge for tobacco to promote their products. We are in a very strange situation here in Japan, where the advertising and marketing of tobacco is left to an industry organization, the Tobacco Institute of Japan. Their rules govern how tobacco can be advertised and marketed, voluntary rules of the industry itself. This is not uncommon in Japan, but in this case, because we know that ultimately, because of through the litigation in the United States, so there is online, if you want to check it out, there's the tobacco documents. So we know what the tobacco companies really think.
Okay. Well, Chris, wrapping this up, if someone wants to get in contact with you to be more involved and to find out more about this issue, how do they go about doing so, or to get involved with the organization that you're, or is it an organization?
Well,
or what is it?
There are many organizations opposing tobacco.
But which one are you involved in?
I tend to work mostly with the Medical Dental Association for Tobacco Control.
Now, are you doing this voluntarily, or do they actually pay you to be involved?
I gave a speech, and they gave me a small, very small honorary.
It's
voluntary.
Voluntary.
Yes. The other group is the Japan Society for Tobacco Control. It's another major group involved. Internationally, there's the group called ASH, Action on Smoking and Health. So there's many groups. I would also give a shout out to Mike Bloomberg.
Why is that? Why would you do
Mike
that?
Bloomberg generously donated a very large amount of money for the promotion of tobacco control internationally.
Now, what's a very large amount of money?
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Nice. Well, Chris, on that note, I want to thank you for coming in here today to talk about this very important issue. And look up, we should follow up on this and see where we're going. This yes. Maybe about a year from now, it could be faster than that. Something really, really probably comes up. Let's say within the next 6 months or so.
I hope so.
I want to thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Lance.
I want to thank all of you for watching or listening to this podcast. And never forget, it's all unknown, so continue to reach for the stars.
Because you're too blessed to be stressed.